Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 113 of the Pika Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me is my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And I swear, the 13 episodes since episode 100 have gone by so much faster than the 13 episodes right after we picked up the podcast again.
That's true. We seem to be flying through these.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's actually a really good point, because I think it's because, I don't know if you remember, but those original episodes were like 3 hours long. I think one of us was just like, we just need to time box this somehow, so that we're not talking for 4 hours every week. So, but yeah, I think we did that right around expansion launch. There was so much to cover, like new stuff and changes and all that fun
stuff. We could have talked forever at that point, and it was just like, we're going to do 90 minutes. That's our cutoff, which we've actually gotten very good at.
I think so. I think we're basically professional.
By and large, we are in the like 1 hour 25 minutes to 1 hour 35 minutes range every week. It's kind of wild. But that's not what you all came here to hear about. What you probably came to hear about is the fact that patch 9.2.5 releases this week. That is Tuesday in North America, Wednesday in Europe, and Thursday in I think all like China, Taiwan, Korea all get it the same day. I'm not entirely sure. And there's stuff there. There's not a huge amount of like content stuff, but there's systems changes that are important. And there's class changes, including some for the Windwalker, which I might be able to like bully Babylonius into poking his head in for like 5 minutes. I don't know. Okay.
I read his write-up.
Yeah. Oh, you read his write-up? That's what we actually need.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 9.2.5 on Tuesday. But before we get into that, how's progression going, Anom?
You know, it's awesome. I haven't done any progression in basically 4 weeks. So I've missed out on all of Anduin and all of Lords of Dread. So the guild did kill Lords last week. They had a heartbreaking, like, 0% wipe basically at the end of, I think, Tuesday, or really early on Thursday, our second raid night. Ended up still getting through it and getting a couple of Ragalon, I think, pulls on later, but no, so they're on Ragalon right now, about 50-ish pulls in, sitting right around like the 60% mark. So basically that first sort of drop down phase is sort of where we're dying. But we'll see. I'll hopefully be in starting on Tuesday. And we'll see. I'll have maybe next week a little bit more info on how Ragalon's going, but no, we've just extending at this point.
Yeah,
that's all we're doing. So,
yeah,
it's I will say, actually, my own personal progression. I did one Mythic Plus last week just to get something in my box, and I got Mythic Plus gloves. So 278 gloves. So I was able to turn those into 278 tier gloves, and now I have full Mythic 4 set.
Congrats.
It was, it's great. I love being able to gear through Mythic Plus. I don't know if I ever was against that system, I'm an idiot.
You were.
I was 100% against it. But no, it's going well.
Yeah. So for my part, I learned last week not to underestimate the Lords of Dread. Because we went in on that. We had a little bit of time on it on Friday, and we went on Sunday, and we didn't kill it. We had a like 7% wipe or something, right? Like, we were close. But we had a few different issues that came up. And one of them was that I just straight up wasn't as prepared as I needed to be on the like tank positioning end of things. Like, obviously we do the like, you have your tanks at right angles so they don't cleave each other with the frontals and you move and blah, blah, blah. The issue was like how quickly and how far you move each time you move when you do the moves. And we had had some issues early in the night that were ultimately because people didn't bait the sleepy clouds well, that forced us to do extra movement that led to us having a movement strategy that just wasn't actually very good. We reached the end and kind of ran out of space because we hadn't been efficient with our movement. And I just didn't do the prep necessary to know that that was, like, I suspected it was going to happen, but I didn't do the prep necessary to like forcefully push back and say, no, we can't do that because this is going to definitely be the end result. So I don't know if that would have gotten us the kill, but we did have a low wipe where we like tried to move the bosses into the middle and then like cleaved half the raid with one of the frontals. And But then when we actually killed it this Friday, we had like a million miles of open space behind us and we're perfectly fine. So yeah.
Awesome. So did you get any Rigolon pulls in on Friday?
Yeah, we had about 2 hours on Rigolon. We have also gotten to about 60%. So we're about 30 pulls in, about 60%. The big thing is just like we were actually like gaming out of our minds on Friday, right? Like we were absolutely crushing it. Quasar kills were on point. We were making it through. We made it through the first down phase with basically everybody alive and then died to the second set of the quasars in phase two. And if that trend continues, like tonight's gonna fly by, right? Like we're gonna see so much of this fight. We might not kill it, but we're gonna see a ton of it. But it's also a fight that, much like Anduin, is very easy to just like throw pulls to simple things. Somebody kills a quasar too soon and then the puddle expires before the next set of event horizon or dark eclipses comes out and you just die, right? Or the other way around, you don't kill the unstable matter or a quasar in time, or somebody accidentally takes a puddle that they're not supposed to. There's just so many ways to oops, we're dead. And if we're on point like we were on Friday, we could just fly through this and there's a chance we could kill it tonight. But I'm not getting my hopes up because of how, like, we can. It's just so easy to lose pulls on that boss.
Gotcha. Yeah,
I'm excited. It's a fun boss to tank.
Nice. Yeah. I honestly, you were saying a bunch of things. I don't know what any of those mechanics are because I don't get them as a
receiver. Well, I don't get any of them. Well, you do have to not take puddles, you know.
I don't know. Ice in melee. There's no.
There are going to be puddles very close to melee. God
damn. All right. Yes. Maybe I should figure out what's going on in that fight.
Yeah, the mythic positioning. So a lot of people on heroic position the boss farther away from where the quasars spawn. On mythic, you actually position him closer to where the initial set of quasars spawn. And they die quickly, but they die pretty close to the boss.
Okay. So right, I'll review some of our pulls and see what we're doing.
You should do that. If you want to be on the boss,
I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on that fight.
Did you know that there are three unstable cores downstairs this time on Mythic?
No. So you have to kill all three?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Each intermission there's three, or is it
each intermission there's three?
Oh Jesus. Well, I'm not going down, so I don't.
No. When everybody goes down, there's three.
Those cores. I thought you meant the little things you kill. Again, I don't know what anything. I don't know how this boss fight works.
They're all various balls that you kill and soak. Yeah.
Yeah, and you soak in the down phase, and I hit revival and snipe trank on the second one in the first down phase. So that's basically how I do that boss, at least on heroic. So
yeah.
Now I'll have to do some research. Darn it.
Yeah, you're going to have to do some research. The boss changes in sneaky ways.
And there'll be more changes. I guess we'll have to figure out when we get there today to talk about, because Rigolon did get a change or two in terms of the thing. So, but I guess before we talk about the 9.2.5 stuff, there's a couple things that happened outside of 9.2.5 that I just wanted to sort of briefly touch on before we get into that. So first up is Diablo Immortal, the Do You Have Phones game that Blizzard is coming out with. Finally launches. It goes live on June 2nd, which is Thursday, I believe, if my days of the week are right.
That is
Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, goes live on all your fun major iOS, Android, and also PC. So if you're interested, every review I've heard coming out of this game is that it's a fun mobile game. It's not a full-blown game release, and so don't expect Diablo 3 on mobile. But no, it seems cool. The couple of videos I've watched on it seem like it should be kind of fun. So I'll probably play it, give my review next week. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit. So
this is one of those times that I am a little bit sad that I don't commute, because I don't have opportunity to ever play anything like this. It's like, when am I going to sit down and play a phone game while I could play a PC game, right?
Exactly.
There's the short like puzzle games and stuff like that that, still work for that. you know, you,
yeah,
but something more involved like this is like, when am I ever going to play it?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that good times to play it is like, if you have kids and they're up in the middle of the night and you're trying to get them to go back to sleep, if you can hold a baby in one hand, you can play a game with the other hand. So you get a lot of, you know, Hearthstone Battlegrounds matches in right now. That's how I'm doing it. So you just could have kids and we'll send, that would help maybe.
Yeah. I'm good. Thanks.
So, but no, it should be interesting to play it. Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna have a similar issue. I agree. Like I also don't commute. So it's like, yeah, if I play it, it's like in like the 15 minute downtime I have like between doing something or before I have to go and do something. So,
right.
But cool. So that comes out this week. Finally, I think folks are somewhat excited. So heard good stuff. Next up that Blizzard posted was a quick little blue post, particularly around, add-ons and the raid mechanic accessibility. So they put up this like sort of larger post to try and describe how they view mechanics, particularly around like random mechanics or like the way they sort of measure mechanical complexity inside of a boss fight. And they basically use sort of a three question system, right? It's basically, how complex is the mechanic? How much affordance does a mechanic have? Basically, like, how clear is it and how much time are you given to actually react to that mechanic? And then finally, what's the punishment for failure of the mechanic, right? And so the idea was, is they basically, Blizzard looks at this and does a balance of those three things to sort of identify, you know, how they look at sort of mechanics and things like that. If something's, you know, extremely difficult, extremely high complexity, extremely high affordance, and failure is sort of binary, you know, that's sort of one thing that they want to be very clear in the UI about that mechanics coming. So they sort of give a couple of examples of that. And how they view it. So, and really the fact that I think the big thing to come out of this is like, they don't create these mechanics to thwart add-ons, right? I think their positioning was, is they just make complex mechanics because they want to make them, right? Not that they want you to have to install an add-on to figure it out. And they sort of point to like complexity around like mechatorks, like bots, and, a little bit around sort of the Among Us phase of Lords of Dread, yeah, right? As like not extreme, like trying to limit add-on information, but also making the mechanic very clear about how you need to communicate. Although I'll tell you, like Among Us, particularly with that guild, like the main guild that people sort of point to is the Guild of All Deaf Players. They actually just killed Heroic Jailer, I think this week at some point.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was last week. And yeah, how like the Among Us mechanic for them without add-ons to like vote or like point to things is a very difficult to communicate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also something. So the Among Us mechanic in particular is significantly more difficult to do without add-ons with large group sizes, because it's always two imposters. You always have to find both. And if you ever fail to find both, you lose. And that's a lot harder to do with, you know, 30 people in the group, a lot of visual clutter, than it is with 10 people in the group and not very much visual clutter.
Right, yeah.
It's one of those mechanics that really does not scale well with group size. They also pointed out, they called the Loom of Fates from Fate Scribe high affordance, and I take issue with that personally. on normal and heroic, I would agree that it's fairly high affordance. It's pretty, you have a lot of wiggle room for like someone to start it and then die and then somebody else to pick it up and carry the torch, you know. Mm-hmm. On mythic, that is not a high affordance mechanic at all. You have to have a weak aura with the way that they tuned that in order to, right, actually do it. And that's just a timing thing. If you had more time, then it would be a high affordance mechanic. You wouldn't need an assignment weak aura for it. But because they tuned it so that you had to be perfect at it and then made it, you know, randomly assigned, you just have, right, to have a weak aura for it. There's literally no way around it.
Yeah.
You cannot do that without a weak aura. And it's the same issue as Queen Ajara on Mythic, the intermission phase. Random assignments with extremely tight timing. And if you miss the timing, you wipe.
Right.
And
yeah. It's actually a good example. Yeah.
My issue with the Fate Scribe 1/ the Ajara ones in particular is that if you make it easier by increasing the timing, the mechanics immediately just fall flat. They go from being impossible to being trivial if you add 10 seconds to the timer, right? And you have a weak aura. If you have a weak aura and you add 10 seconds to the timer, the mechanic is trivial. If you don't have a weak aura, the mechanic becomes doable. So like, that's one of the really hard things about the game having stuff like weak auras is that if they initially release it with, you know, having it tuned where you don't need a weak aura for it on Mythic, people are still going to write the weak aura and they're just going to trivialize the mechanic. So do you plan on them having the weak aura and then tune it for them having it? And if you do that, you know, like, I guess my thing is like, if they're going to do that, they should actually just find the reason that you need a weak aura to do the assignment in the first place and just bake that into the game. Like, either bake the assignments into the game in a clear way. Like, imagine if on Fatescribe, when it assigned people debuffs, like all the different rings were like colored or numbered in some way.
And your
debuff like put a glowy thing over your head that pointed you to the correct one, and you went and you did that one, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, I agree, because like those type of mechanics that require weak aura is the biggest thing that pushes you there is like your reaction time, right? So like the minute you make that reaction time, the time it takes for you to react to it longer, you again make the mechanic fairly simple to negotiate, right? Or to counter. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I think even with weak auras, right? Like I guess from my perspective with WoW is that WoW has always had a very customizable UI. So it's like a history of the game and as something that like is baked into like just playing WoW are add-ons, right? So the fact that you have to download a weak aura to like negotiate the mechanic, I would feel is less of an issue if it was more difficult to modify the UI or to even like access weak auras such as that, right? Like, I get that you want everything in game, and I 100% am there with that point, but yeah. I sort of give them a pass slightly on stuff like this just because of the ease of the modification of the UI.
Right. I mean, but then if they had that kind of auto assignment thing built into it, right, then we wouldn't have had to deal with all the things like the weak aura being buggy. And, you know, one person not getting, like, they reloaded their UI and they didn't have the note pushed again for them. So they got their assignment and it was just in conflict with everybody else. You know, that's the kind of frustrating experience that can be entirely resolved by them removing the need for there to be a weak aura.
But, yeah, no, I agree. Or you get our biggest issue this tier as a classic example is Pantheon with the wrong assignment weak auras for what icon to run to.
Yeah.
When you get the Night Hunters.
Yep.
Like, and there's two different ones that assign them in two different ways. So like we had a couple of wipes to people just having the wrong one. I 100% get that. I think that's the, maybe like the one trade-off. Cause like the other thing though is that, and this is maybe my only point, is it not my only point, but my final point would be like, if they had auto assigned through the game itself, like what color for Fatescribe particularly, like if what ring you would go to, the mechanics then super easy. Like, it then becomes... Well,
I think that then makes it a little bit more of, like, that gives them room to tune it more tightly. Like, imagine if they had tuned it tightly enough on Mythic that you couldn't just have everybody go left, right? But they auto-assigned it instead.
So they would have auto-assigned two people to one ring if that ring had to go the opposite direction?
Right, or... then you have to do the little dance where like there's two people that have to pass. So, like one person has to step off and go around, and the other two people go by, and you know
that's true. Yeah. So
I mean, it's a different mechanic there. Instead of like, because we nobody did the actual Mythic mechanic of Fatescribe. Yeah. No one did it. Literally zero people in the world have ever tried to do that mechanic as intended.
Right. Yeah.
And that is in part probably because they were a little bit. Like they gave a little bit of wiggle room in the tuning that they wouldn't have otherwise because they weren't doing the assignments. But I really just want them to stop with the randomly assigned things where your entire raid or a significant portion of your raid has like 15 seconds to do some challenging coordination task. Because that's just every single one of those is miserable and there's just a weak aura for it. And you just live or die by the weak aura doing it correctly.
It's awful. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. I'd be happy with more Mechatork type mechanics, the colors.
Yeah.
I think that was an interesting one. And didn't get cluttered with like a bunch of people yelling. So
yeah.
Well, cool. Well, I mean, it's an interesting post to see how they view it. I mean, I don't think we're gonna get away from them. I don't think we're ever gonna get, I think we'll get more mechanics like the Among Us mechanics moving forward. I think that's might be a direction we see, at least for the opening raid next year, where it's like they just limit like information into the UI. And then you have to kind of figure out a way around it. But
that's what Mechatork was too, right? Because you would go in and you could see your color, and the other person could see, or you could see their color and the other person could see yours, but the other way you couldn't see your own.
Yeah, there was no UI. Yeah, there's no like details coming out of the game to tell you. We'll hopefully we see more of those maybe. Maybe they'll be a little bit more fun to talk with or to talk through. So well, cool. Well, a couple more sort of just wrap up things, and then we'll get into the meat of new stuff in 902.5. So it's a couple of 902.5 things, but they're not particularly what was being launched. So first up is there's a glitch. There was a glitch on PTR. I don't know if they actually closed this one. I haven't been tracking it too much, but I saw that Mr. GMT, or Mr. GM, sorry, posted a video of him basically creating a cross-faction guild. So the way it worked, and I don't know if this still works, but you could take a guild charter into any sort of instance content like Torghast or an instance with a player of the other faction. You would then be friendly with that player and you would have them sign the guild charter. When you got all 10 signatures and the guild was created, you could then have both Alliance and Horde people in the same guild. And also the Alliance people could invite other Alliance players into that guild and the Horde people could invite other Horde players into the guild. So you would essentially have a cross-faction guild. Which is, I don't know if they're going to leave this in, but it's interesting that it's funny that this is how it works. And it basically means like the tech is sort of there, right? For cross faction guilds.
I'm really curious what this is going to mean. Like, I'm going to try creating one of these on Tuesday. Yeah. We're going to find out if it breaks in horrible ways. We're not like moving all of our guild stuff over to it if we do manage to create a cross-faction guild. But basically our Alliance guild will be cross-faction if it works on Tuesday when release happens. And we will, I guess, kind of be guinea pigs. Like all of our gold and stuff is going to stay in the single faction Horde guild.
Yeah.
But if this works, it's going to be nice. And maybe it just kind of sticks around as like an unsanctioned way to create a cross-faction guild for the people that want it.
It'll be interesting. I think they still have a couple of bugs they need to work through. Like there's probably still some stuff that's going to break horribly, like actual transfer of mats maybe and things like that might break. Like I don't know, we'll see. But it'll be if this is what's to come, maybe they're going to start just dissolving the factions, which would be nice, I'll say.
Yes, nice. I agree. Also on the topic of 9.2.5, there's a very common point of confusion about what this means for Cutting Edge, AOTC, Keystone Master, and all that stuff. Season 4 is the actual cutoff for all of those. 9.2.5 does not come with Season 4. We did get an announcement that Season 4 is coming, quote, later this summer. And reading through the jargon, there's some like, I don't know, shenanigans where they have to actually be somewhat specific about this. Summer ends on September 1st. So Season 4 is coming sometime between May 31st, which is this coming Tuesday, and August 31st. So there's that 3-month window somewhere in there. It's coming.
Nice.
Very not a, like huge amount of news, but like it is important to know because like my guild has not killed the jailer yet. We still have time in order to kill the jailer. I suspect we won't see Season 4 until they kind of reach their internal target for number of CE guilds / number of AOTC guilds. Because this tier has been significantly longer than normal.
Yeah. Considering what last time I checked it was 18 Alliance guilds in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Yes.
Just yes. So
and I guess like on that note, we can get more into the 9.2.5 stuff, the kind of main topic. And yeah, kind of jumping around a little bit, Cross Realm Mythic opens next week.
Yes.
So normally you wait, or they wait for the both Hall of Fames to fill.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to take so long for Alliance this time around. It really is. It really, really is. So with the cross-faction rating opening next week, they are also enabling cross-realm rating. And I am really hopeful that they just don't turn off cross-realm rating in the future. Like, day one of Mythic next year, I want it to be open for cross-realm.
Yeah.
The stated reason for not doing that is they want guilds, like, the server races, the realm races, to still matter for the people that care about them. But
right,
there's two kinds of realms in the world. There's the Area 52s, where it doesn't really matter. You're not competing with one of the guilds that is literally like top 20 in the world that's going to get first on Area 52.
Yeah.
And then there's the Terralians of the world, where there was legitimately, for a lot of time, like for a long time, there was a legitimate like five teams in the top five that would get CE within like 3 weeks of each other, right?
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. Terralian has one realm, one serious CE guild on it. There's no more race.
Yeah. And I think too, even on a realm like Mal'Ganis, which is in a probably more similar to Area 52 than anything, like I couldn't tell you any of the other guilds close to us in progression, like at all. Like I couldn't name them, I couldn't tell you, but I could tell you other guilds that are close to us in progression, like on other servers, right?
But they're not your, because like I know the names of a couple of other guilds that are around our level that we've been like swapping places with tier over tier.
Yeah.
And that is, that's absolutely correct. It's, and maybe I'm jaded because of like the death of Terralian from all of the economy stuff this expansion. But I don't think the realm race is a serious consideration. It's funny actually. So looking with some external knowledge, bringing from our stats on Warcraft logs, the realm pages for Classic WoW are huge. Like the realm progress and rankings pages are huge. People love those.
Yeah.
Barely, like in comparison, barely any traffic to those on retail. People don't super care on retail. So I think there is literally like a cultural difference there. People do care on Classic.
Right.
And some of it may also be because the Classic realms are a little bit more balanced. There's not as much like, oh, this realm has literally no one and this realm has literally everybody. There's a lot more in that like middle band.
Yeah, that might be, that. And I think too, just the folks who play Classic, I think are a little bit more in tune with like their specific server, right?
No cross realm stuff at all, means that your realm means a little bit more. You know the people who are on your realm maybe a little bit more because you've done heroic dungeons with them and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. So so Cross Realm Mythic opens next week. And then I guess we'll sort of jump around. We'll take the tuning, the class tuning and raid tuning stuff for last. But another thing I just wanted to point out, I didn't actually put this in the notes, but I was just reading the actual patch notes as we're talking here. And this is nice, is that so renowned farming on alts, or even just renowned farming on mains. Basically, they've, the renowned catch-up is now up to 60. You can also buy the buy on account item and grant yourself 60 renowned right off the bat. And then essentially they've added 100% drop rate of renowned to a bunch of different activities, such as Mythic and Mythic Plus dungeons. Torghast layers 9 through 16 will always grant one renowned. Doing a boss encounter or raid encounter will grant you a renowned, and then winning a rated battleground. So basically at this point, layer 9 Torghast is probably the best way to spam out capping any sort of renowned needs you have on your alts or even on your main if you want to cap everything out. So
and a really important thing about this being renowned 60, all of the capstone traits for your soulbinds are at most renowned like 58 or 57. So this gets you You don't get any enhanced conduits. The plus two rank on conduits you don't get from this, but you do get all of the Soulbind traits, which is pretty big for some Soulbinds like Dreamweaver that have a very powerful capstone. Mm-hmm. This is way better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've also done a couple other things to Torghast itself. I know we sort of mentioned it there, but basically all wings of Torghast are open all the time now. So if you only wanted to do a specific one to farm this sort of layer 9 renowned.
Or you never want to do the one with the stupid mobs that spam the healing reduction.
Yes. God. Yeah. So that's now a thing, which is nice for your Torghast farming. I guess one other quick thing too, I think we talked about this at some point, but they decreased the amount of times you need to craft legendary items to get the next rank. Now it's down to what, like, I think you need to craft 3 of each rank to unlock the next higher rank or something.
Yeah, they nerfed it by 2/3. It was 10, it is now 3. That is also, there's a, like, we've talked before about the significant upfront cost for legendaries.
Yeah.
It's pretty big that they've cut that by, 66%, right? Yeah. We're going to see a drop in legendary prices for the higher ranks as a result of that. And they already dropped once this tier. So that's great. Like, legitimately, I have a level 60 Alliance character that I prepped for this patch. And I went to buy legendaries and I realized that I couldn't because I didn't have the gold. I had 15,000 gold from leveling, which is not a small amount of gold, right? Like, I had 15,000 gold. I could not buy a single legendary. I had to buy, like, I'm wearing 226 gear from Xerath Mortis. Yeah. I had to buy eye level 210 legendaries.
Legendaries. Oh, God.
In order to have gold left.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So I took an eye level downgrade over the world quest gear in order to put legendaries on. How bad does that feel?
Yeah, that's awful.
My legendary is lower eye level than my world quest gear.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And I was going to actually transfer gold to myself, right? Like, you used to be able to do this trick where you would go to the auction house and you would list like a gray item for, 100,000 gold.
Yeah.
And then you would go to your main on the other faction, you would buy it, and you would lose the auction house cut. You would lose your 5%. But you would get all the other gold on your Alliance character. And that's, great. With the change to the auction house, they have fixed that. You can no longer buy your own auctions, which I'm sure actually has, like, ramifications for people doing exploity stuff, breaking, like, Trade Skill Master data and, like, self-dealing and wash trading effectively kind of stuff. But, also meant that there is no way for you to transfer gold to yourself effectively. I mean, I could have roped in guildies, right? I could have been like, okay, I'm going to list this here. I want you to go, I'm going to give you 100,000 gold, go spend it on this thing. That's significantly higher effort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then you want to do that. Yeah, for sure. And I guess, we did. We talked about cross the bug with cross faction guilds, but they are also launching just cross faction content with this. Yes. So instance content you can do across factions. So that's like mythic raids, mythic raids, dungeons, raided BGs, stuff like that, can now be cross faction. Communities are cross faction. Notably, guilds should not be cross faction. We talked about that bug. So it looks like you might be able to do that. But no, so this is sort of the cross faction instance patch. There are a handful of instances that aren't eligible to be cross faction. Almost all of them contain a Alliance or Horde specific either boss fight, boss order, or just like in the case of Siege of Borealis, a starting point in the dungeon is different if you're Horde or Alliance. So all the trials from Wrath are not eligible. So Trial of the Crusader, Trial of the Champion, which is the dungeon. The Vault of Arkanov, which is the Wintergrass dungeon, is not there. Icecrown Citadel, different ship battles. Baradin Hold, which I forget which that one is. I think that's in Cataclysm, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the Tol'Borad dungeon.
Yeah.
Or raid. Yeah.
Correct, yes. Siege of Borealis, like I mentioned, Battle to Zar'alor, because you have different starting bosses after the initial one. And then Dark Maul Citadel, which is the Exile's Reach dungeon, which I guess is...
I like that they felt the need to specify.
Yeah, just because, the starter zone.
Yeah. That one will, by the way, queue you into the dungeon with NPCs if there aren't enough players around.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a thing that's happened before.
Very cool. So yeah, so cross-faction, I don't think my guild is planning to actually do anything like this, just because we're super lazy, and so like our biggest hindrance is like mats, basically. Yeah. Transferring them and doing that type of stuff. So I think our stance, if you want to change factions, you're more than welcome to, but just make sure you have your own flask pots, you know, armor kits, all that fun stuff. So
right, yeah, that's we are going to, I need to like do a raid team ping this afternoon probably and clarify what our rules are. But basically, we're going to be like, yeah, you can transfer. You have to let an officer know that you are transferring before you do it. And let us give you the thumbs up just so we can like make sure we don't have so many people transfer that it actually causes logistical problems.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it will, but, you know, just making sure. And then, you're on your own for consumables and repairs at that point. We will have a like sister guild. We're going to have, so our main guild is Occasional Excellence. We're going to have Occasionally Alliance, or Occasional Alliance. I'm not entirely sure yet. One of the two. And, it's going to have, you know, there will be a guild bank. It is not going to be stocked with the gold from our Horde guild. It is not going to have, you know, gold cap of gold in there like our Horde guild. So you are on your own for repairs and materials on Alliance.
Yeah, I think that's... I don't think anyone said anything in my guild about doing it other than just like our raid leader was just like, you're on your own is sort of their point. So it's like...
We have a few people that are interested in it. Honestly, the biggest thing for me is just like, I have friends that play Alliance, and now I can actually do things with them.
Nice.
Like, part of the reason I started leveling the mages is because I wanted to do things with them. And then 9.2.5 started happening. I was like, oh, okay, I'm actually able to do things with everybody. So I just finished leveling in this Alliance because I figure it's also going to end up, I think, being the GM of the Alliance Guild.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. Awesome. So that's, there's cross faction stuff coming. So maybe more in 10.0.
Sorry. On that note, this is not in the notes, but it worked on PTR. So we're assuming it's going to be correct on live. You're going to be able to trade within a group. So if you're in a cross faction instance with a player of the opposite faction, you are going to be able to trade items, not just the like items that are normally eligible to be traded cross realm. You know, you're going to be able to trade materials and stuff between factions. Obviously, trading like 18 people Vantus runes is going to be a huge pain in the rear because they can't just go to the guild bank and pull them out.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you're going to be able to trade them. You're also going to be able to mail items cross faction. So that solves my problem of getting gold to my Alliance alt. I'm going to be able to mail myself gold like I do with my Horde alts.
Nice. Very cool. Awesome. I mean, it sounds like it'll be fun. Funnily enough, all my friends that have played Alliance quit because they had nobody to play with. So I'm in the opposite situation with you, where just everybody I know now is Horde. So cool. So one more thing. So final topic, then we'll talk about changes, is Blizzard did put into the game with this patch a new social contract. Basically something you have to agree to the first time you open the game before you're allowed to play. And basically it's a way for Blizzard to sort of essentially say, don't be an asshole to other players. Like, basically what the social contract is, it's sort of an idea of like, this is the way you should conduct yourself while you're playing the game, and you sort of, you know, have read, understand, and agree with, you'll conduct yourself in this way as you play the game. I think the biggest thing with this too, because they pair this up with a more streamlined, they talk about more streamlined ability to report player behavior. It basically is going to be able for them to quickly be able to sort of hand down punishments to individuals that break sort of this code of conduct, right? Yeah. Because at this point they're saying, you've reviewed it, you've read it, you've agreed to it, and hey, very clearly in the logs, we can see you did X, Y, and Z thing. Here's your timeout, you know, for whatever the infraction was, right?
Yeah. And honestly, I'm a little bit hopeful that this is going to curb the toxicity in leveling dungeons. That's honestly, I think, one of the areas that this could improve if people feel empowered to report people that are just absolute dirtbags in leveling dungeons. Just absolute, complete fucking shitlords. I just finished leveling my mage. I did a good number of leveling dungeons while doing that. And there are some awful people in those dungeons. Oh my god.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you've had people leave. Like, I would rather have dealt with people leaving my, you know, Mythic Plus keys than deal with these people in leveling dungeons. It's so bad. It's, you know, not every dungeon. Most of them are fine. But then you get in one, and it's just like, I feel dirty just being in the same instance as you. Please leave.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, if people have read and agreed to this, they know what the expectations are. And they know they can go, and they can report people for this kind of behavior. Like, WoW dungeons have a reputation for being toxic. They just do. It's been built over 15 years of just nothing being done about that behavior. So I'm hopeful that this actually might result in something being done about that behavior.
Yeah.
Because even if, like, Final Fantasy has a reputation for there being people who will be passive aggressive, very passive aggressive in dungeons, there are some people definitely that will. I would much rather deal with one person being, like, snarky and passive aggressive every, you know, a few dungeons than deal with some of the stuff people say and do in leveling dungeons.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I also, it's funny, like you mentioned, like, it's generally they're okay, but there's always that one that's real bad. And that's basically my same experience. I just finished leveling my priest, doing nothing but dungeons through 60 to, or whatever, 50 to 60 all through Shadowlands. And like, yeah, they're generally, they were great. They were not great. Maybe they were a little slow. Maybe I might've been the passive aggressive one a couple of times, but like there, I can see there was one that was just like, this guy just went off. And like, it's one of those situations where if you're that upset, I feel like just leave. But like, this individual like stayed in there just to continue to like say things.
Berate somebody.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, just like.
I tried to vote kick somebody that was doing that.
Yeah.
And the vote kick didn't pass. And then they vote kicked the person that they were going off on. I just left the dungeon at that point. Like, I'm a DPS. Yeah. They can replace somebody. Once somebody else has been kicked or removed from the dungeon, there's no leaver penalty either. So you can just leave and go for another dungeon. But like, it's
crazy.
I don't know if this is actually going to have a major impact on that, but I am hopeful that maybe people will be like, because right now, if you go and you try and report somebody, right? Like, your options for like, why are you reporting this person are very limited. Like, they basically, the implication is basically that they need to be saying some real like racist, awful stuff in order to warrant a report.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the case. Like, it just shouldn't be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be, hopefully it makes it better. We'll see. But no, that's, I think that was one of the bigger things that people had sort of latched onto is something new for the patch. So it'll be fun to see how it plays out. So, well, cool. I think finally we can maybe turn our attention to like the fun stuff in the patch, which is all of the crazy class changes, bug fixes, and then talk a little bit about the massive nerfs to Mythic Sepulchre, which I feel like is just a headline every week that we talk about this new raid, or this raid is like every week it's a new round of quote unquote massive nerfs. And so the trend continues with 9.2.5, but
for people that are watching today, these are not active this week. They got announced on like Friday. They're not active right now. They are turning on with your realms restarts with the release of 9.2.5.
Yep. But yeah, so with 9.2.5 on the class change side of things, a couple, I guess, points I wanted to make, and then you can sort of jump in. Particular to, we'll say, monks, really not like Mistweaver got basically nothing. We got one PvP talent changed, our Zen Focus T, which basically gave you one uninterruptible cast, had its cooldown reduced from 45 to 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds, you can do a heal without being interrupted, which was I don't PvP, but I'm assuming because all of our healing, casted healing, is the same school of magic. It sucks when you get interrupted. So that'll be a nice change to Mistweaver. I think the bigger changes came with Windwalker, where they just got a massive damage increases to basically all of their single target abilities. So 20% across the board, but it was 20% increase to Rising Sun Kick, the primary target of Fist of Fury, Blackout Kick, Tiger Palm, and Fist of the White Tiger. All increased by 20% each. And basically, Blizzard's note here, you can sort of read it as they pop up, but essentially, Windwalker single target damage sucks. We're basically taking a more extreme approach and trying to push it up, particularly in raid content. So huge single target nerfs. I think a bunch of sims were run by the old Windwalker community. Basically, they're saying about a 10 to 12% increase to your single target damage, which I don't think makes Windwalker necessarily best damage dealer, but definitely right. bumps them up from a overall perspective to be, you know, slightly more competitive than they are today.
This is obviously the developer note actually in particular is very encouraging because it specifically calls out improving their single target damage to help make up for the fact that their niche, their AoE niche, simply may not come up, which it didn't really this tier. Like you look at Lords of Dread, Raigalon, the Jailer, Anduin, none of these had really significant AoE components. Like Anduin, obviously, if you're trying to parse and pad, AoE is a huge part of it. But in terms of actually progressing the fight, it's not important. Like the things just die to people using their cooldowns in that phase. So it's not really a big deal. So I'm really curious. So I'm pulling up the statistics on damage. Let's look at boss damage. Damage to bosses. For Windwalker monks. Let's see. What's a good boss?
Single target boss?
Yeah, let's do Helandris. It's early enough that there's going to be a good number of Windwalker parses, right? Yep. But not so early that it's going to be just like everybody and their dad doing it.
Well, maybe now.
Yeah, so I mean, this is the single target DPS rankings for all percentiles on Helandris over the past 2 weeks. So Windwalker Monk is here with the median being just under 11k DPS. So if we take like the one that's literally in the middle, that is Retribution Paladin, and their median is just under 12k. So if you take about 10 to 12% buff to Windwalker, that is actually putting them up here where Retribution Paladin is on single target on Helandris. Which, like you said, it's not making them the best, not by any means, but it is giving them a pretty substantial improvement and making the gap between them and, you know, the next highest.
Exactly.
Smaller.
Yeah. Which is what I think you'd want, right? Like, I think Windwalkers have consistently had terrible single target damage, right? And so
it's been consistently bad for a long time.
Yeah, but so now they get those buffs, which is awesome for the Windwalker community, I think. So congratulations on doing more single target damage. I guess we should say too, this doesn't apply to PvP, which I think, I don't know if Windwalker's good in
every single one of these hotfix notes says this change does not apply to PvP. It's like they really want to be sure people understand Windwalker is not getting buffed in PvP.
Yeah, exactly.
They're
exactly.
really adamant about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So they get their little single target, not little, but they get their fairly sizable single target damage buffs. Maybe Babs will go back and actually play Windwalker again now instead of being a dirty feral druid or whatever he plays now. Whatever. I guess the other thing too, and we'll maybe use this time to transition to tanks. So tank threat, basically every tank specialization, they've increased the threat that you generate while you're in tank specialization. So essentially every tank just does more threat. But I'm assuming you have a point to make on that.
So they did not put a number in the hotfix notes. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why they didn't put a number here. It is about an 18% increase to tank threat is the specific number. And they have this note. They had this note. Okay. And they basically say, blah, blah, blah. We've heard a lot of complaining about this. Where our goal is that a tank that is actively doing their damage rotation to an enemy should be able to maintain threat. But that just using AoE spells like Consecration and Death and Decay shouldn't be enough by itself. And I don't really know where they want to draw the line on this, because like Consecration and Death and Decay are like really low damage, right? Like nobody's holding threat on anything with those in any universe right now because of how little damage they do.
Right.
But things like, you know, Keg Smash and Avenger's Shield and Blood Boil should be enough, is like my read on this, is what they're trying to say. And I don't know that 18% is necessarily enough to eliminate a lot of the issues with stuff like Fury Warriors. You know, Fury Warrior dropping spear is still going to be probably taunting everything in range, just realistically speaking. But this does make things better. It's going to make threat rips just way less common. This is a much bigger problem in keys and on boss fights with adds that spawn midway through. So as an example, I lost threat pretty routinely on the Monstrous Soul. You know, we had Druids on the second Monstrous Soul in the first intermission phase using Ravenous Frenzy there. And so when they would hit their Ravenous Frenzy burst, it would just go and punch them in the face. Like, we just had to have a taunt ready for it. And, you know, that kind of sucks. It just kind of sucks. That luckily neither Lords of Dread Regalon or the Jailer has any adds that actually are tankable, so it's not an issue on those. It actually has a secondary effect, maybe. Well, there's this little thing we can get into for like how threat works. In order to rip threat off somebody, you have to go a certain percent above the amount of threat that they have. So if they have 200 threat, you have to reach 220 threat as a melee DPS in order to rip off of them, or as another tank to rip off of them. So the more threat you generate, the higher in absolute terms that threshold becomes. With this threat buff, now instead of you having 200 threat, you're going to have 220 threat. And in order to rip off of you, somebody is going to have 22 over you. They're going to have to reach 242 instead of 220. So that actually should have some improvement to accidentally ripping off your co-tank. If your co-tank is a blood decay this tier, you've dealt with it. Blood decays do a lot of damage during Dancing Rune Weapon, and they have Dancing Rune Weapon a lot. They rip threat a lot. It's very annoying. But the absolute value of that 10% is going to grow faster because of this buff, and should have some impact on threat rips between tanks. Not necessarily a huge impact, but some impact.
Yeah, that's good.
Another Brewmaster-specific thing that is also not in the hotfix notes, from PTR testing, the four-piece bonus for Brewmaster Monks has gotten some changes. I don't have the full details handy right now because I am not the one that actually tested this. But there were two main issues with the Brewmaster 4-piece. The first one was actually a bug. Basically, your health bonus from the 4-piece was entirely determined by the last target that was hit by Keg Smash. When you use it in AoE, the last target is effectively random and never the target that you actually, you know, cast it on. But other than that, effectively random. That had some really bad interactions on certain bosses, aka Regalon. If you Keg Smash Regalon while he's stacked next to one of the downstairs cores, you will lose your entire health bonus every time.
Okay.
Because it will always hit the core second, and the core has a 99% damage reduction. So it will reduce your entire HP bonus from all 10 stacks of your bonus to 1% of its value. And so the bug was that your last hit was determining the whole stack. This had upsides. It let you do things like on Ingram Moloch in Mists of Tirna Scythe. If you had a crit with a damage amp from Weapons of Order, you could hit like almost 500,000 health because you would have 10 stacks that were treated as having a 40% damage bonus from Weapons of Order and having crit, which is just not possible. So this is both removing that like absurd amount of HP you could get there, but also removing the stuff like just dying on Rigelon because you lost your HP bonus. So it's going to be a lot more consistent value due to that change. Just with not as extreme highs and lows. The other change is that they actually changed how max HP works for the four-piece bonus. I don't think this is a general change, but when you lose your four-piece bonus or you shunt your 10th stack off by applying a new one, if that reduces your max HP, it does not reduce your current HP by a corresponding amount, which is how max HP bonuses normally work. We've done a bunch of testing to verify this works across the board with max HP bonuses. Fortifying Brew, Rally, all these effects that increase your max HP work like this, where they subtract the amount of HP gained from both your current and maximum. And for most effects that are like a 10 to 20% HP bonus, it more or less preserves the amount of HP that you had as a percent. But you could, if you went enough decimal places over, you could see that it changed. Like for Fortifying Brew as an example, you generally have to go to like the third decimal place in order to see that the percent did in fact change. But it did. For this, for the Brewmaster set, as we've discussed at length on this podcast before, it could kill you.
Yeah.
It could take you from 50% HP to zero. So it was actually a pretty serious problem. We have a pin in brew questions because of how frequently this came up and because of a related bug in details where it only uses your max HP when you died. So it would look like you were at full HP and then died when in fact you were at 50% HP and then died.
Gotcha.
That is actually a buff to the tier set as well. What happens is when you get, basically you're getting more healing out of it now. Some of the healing is sneaky where some of the health loss before was kind of sneaky, sneakily reducing the amount of healing you got from it. And that's no longer happening. So you're going to just passively like kind of get healed more from the set than you were before.
Okay.
On the whole, this makes the four piece way, way better. Way better. Just basically by virtue of the fact you're not going to randomly die. Like it's on a numbers level, like you're not going to be able to do stupid things with like 500k touch of death on Ingram Malak. But on the flip side, you're not going to randomly die. And randomly dying was way more common.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we talked about it, like the first week people would get four piece and like our tank would died randomly on whoever the first boss is in the instance on Mythic, and like we couldn't figure out why, other than like, oh yeah, my four piece dropped off because he was still used to like holding Keg Smash, right? Like,
yeah,
Rad's coming in and it's like, no, you can't do that because you will kill yourself.
Yeah. Which this means I get to delete my Keg of the Heavens tracking weak aura. I've got a weak aura that like yells at me when I need to Keg Smash or I lose my buff.
That's so funny.
And so I could delete that now. Like I'll still lose my buff if I get it, but it won't kill me. So I don't need to worry about it as much. So I can like sit there on the second charge and I'll get my stacks back. Like on Anduin, I would sometimes want to sit on my Keg Smash for hitting the Lost Soul so I could apply the Monk debuff to them.
Okay.
Yep. And if you Keg Smash them, there's like 10 of them anyway. So you just get full stacks immediately back. But if I'm low health or like half health even going into it, I can't hold it. I have to push the button on Anduin. Right. And so this means that now I could hold it and now I could do the what should be the smart play of like pushing Keg Smash on those adds and getting the debuff applied to them and everything. I found other ways to get the debuff on them, but it would have been easier if I could just use Keg Smash.
No, that's funny. That's an awesome change. It seems like that eliminates the frustrating part of the set bonus. The set bonus seems very good. Just
it's
frustrating in terms of like how it was implemented and what can happen.
This does so Night Fae note. This means you're going to not see the random massive HP values on Night Fae anymore. Weapons of Order, Kyrian Brewmaster could reach higher HP values due to the damage ammo Weapons of Order. while weapons of order was up. Night Fae could reach those values more frequently because just you press Feyline Stomp more. Night Fae had the downside that like your HP changed so much more. It was super, super volatile. It's going to be a lot more consistent now. If you've gotten used to like seeing your HP go up to like 250k by playing Night Fae, I have some bad news.
That's funny.
So, yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very, nice. Very happy with that change.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, it looked like it was going to be a patch with almost no class changes because, yeah, these were announced what Friday, into the weekend. So
yeah.
We got a bunch of new stuff. I mean, Mistweavers didn't, but you know, our Windwalker friends did. And sounds like Brewmaster got a really good change. So
Mistweaver got a buff. The buff is that their Brewmaster no longer dies, and thus they don't get punched in the face.
That's fair. That's fair. If you're running two monks, though, I mean, you don't want to do that. There's no point. Well, cool. Well, that's it. I think for a bunch of other classes got changes. I don't think there's nothing. I mean, I'd really want to go through.
No, there's not a lot else that is super important. My raid leader is super, super hyped that BM Hunter got like a 7% single target buff. But that's not really a monk thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest changes, or some of the biggest changes we've seen, are actually to the rest of the raid, right? So there was a multitude of changes to pretty much every boss outside of like the opening, like two, like Skolex. I don't think any changes. Neither did.
Yep.
I don't even know what the first boss's name is.
Vigilant Guardian.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah, no changes. Didn't touch to
those
that.
Two. Yeah. But we start with Zymox. I guess we'll just sort of quickly run through these. I think the bigger ones come a little bit later, but the initial ones are interesting. So Artificer Zymox, so Decipher Relic cast time increased from 25 to 30 seconds. That's the intermission cast?
No, that's the cast that the ads do on the platform.
Oh, I am terrible with abilities. I'm glad you're here.
This basically actually is like making it so you can limp through a platform if somebody dies. You don't need everybody alive for the platform to still do it. It's going to make it a little bit easier. It's also going to lower the DPS check for it, but it's not like a huge, huge nerf.
Yeah. Okay. That's not too bad. On Pantheon, the imprinted safeguards, which these are the things that on Mythic difficulty you need to run Night Hunters through to like clear the shields.
Yeah.
Basically, the reduction was 50%, both in damage and healing taken. They've reduced that to 35%. Essentially, I think now you can miss an ad and still either kill or heal it just by focusing it, which is nice.
We've healed ads with the shields on them before, by like sacrificing a priest's entire mana bar for the good of the raid. It was possible to do. I think we've actually killed it once by doing that. You like dump GS and lay on hands, and if you can set up a spirit link totem, that's great. But it's possible to actually just legitimately heal them up with 50%. 35% is going to be way more doable.
You can definitely probably miss one Night Hunter now and still be okay to either kill or heal up the ads on Pantheon. But you're gonna skip that fight anyway. It's a terrible fight. Next up, Lehuvum got a health reduction to both the ads and the boss itself by 10%, which I guess cleans up the intermission, right? Like you might be able to now just cleans up the intermission so you can kill things slightly easier. But the health nerf is interesting. I wonder if that means you can cut off an intermission now.
I definitely think on farm you're going to be able to. What this does also is that it may be possible now to actually do double ad kills twice without using so that's another possibility. I'm not sure it'll be actually a worthwhile strat to do that, but it's a possibility.
But the health nerf hopefully will be nice. It just shortens that fight's, it doesn't feel long, but it's a 9-minute fight. Next up we have Helandris with more nerfs. The only mythic difficulty nerf was ephemeral eruption, which is the orbs hitting the boss. their initial damage reduction, or their initial damage was reduced significantly. On mythic difficulty is the wording. I'm assuming this means it's no longer a one shot, so you can probably miss an orb and live through it.
So I'm thinking this is like, so on heroic, you can miss an orb and like it'll probably get people killed, but it won't like instant wipe the raid. You can live through one. I'm thinking that's what this changes for mythic.
Yeah. Yeah, let you at least let one hit. And it does leave a dot that is significant, so you'll have to, you know, commit some cooldowns for it, but you'll be able to power through. They also reduce the damage of Light Shatter, the beam, which is the tank dot or tank beam, from 500% to 300% on heroic difficulty. Again, this probably just lets your tank take two in a row now with cooldowns.
You can already tank. You can tank two in a row right now with cooldowns. It requires major cooldowns, though.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking, you need to push Zen Meditation with Celestial Brew up or something to live through it, or you stack Fort Brew and Dampen Harm. You know, you use either stack two cooldowns or use one really big cooldown like Zen Med in order to live through it. So that's going to mean that you can, it's going to move it from needing like Dampen Harm plus Fort Brew to being Fort Brew is okay. You're going to be very scary, but you'll live, which is going to make the boss significantly easier to do in like a heroic pug, right? It's going to mean that your tanks don't have to be perfect about getting the swap every time, because the swap is very fast. You're swapping like every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like one cast, taunt, one cast, taunt, boss does a thing, cast, taunt, intermission. Like it's very fast.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be a nice little change to Helandris. And then we really get into, I think, the biggest changes as we get to these end bosses. So Anduin got another round of just dumpstering this kid. So I'll just kind of quickly read through these. His overall health was reduced by 5% in all difficulties. So 5% health reduction to Anduin itself. The Monstrous Souls got their health reduced by 5% on all difficulties. Monstrous Souls, of course, is the intermission add.
Yeah, that's the abomination. Yep.
Anduin's Despair, which are the ads down below.
That's the big ad down below.
Got its health reduced by 10%. Anduin's Hope, which are the healing ads, had their movement speed reduced, both heroic and mythic difficulty, essentially giving you more time to heal them up, which is nice. Which basically means I think you can probably get all four in every intermission.
Well, you have to do that on Mythic. You go down, you drop a Master Spell on them, you drop like some kind of big heal. Like what we do is one set has a Shaman that uses the Venthyr, whatever, Chain Harvest.
Yeah.
To just instantly top like two of them, and the other two are at like 90%. And the other one has a Beacon of Virtue. The Paladin puts a Beacon of Virtue out on them after the Master Spell. And then you just blast heals. And heal them up that way. Like you have to get 100% of them on Mythic. I'm a little bit surprised actually that they didn't change it on Mythic to let you miss two. Let you either miss like a doubt or a hope or like two total. I'm a little bit surprised that's not the Mythic change. The Despair health change, like Despair is gonna die so fast now. I don't know. They also, I guess they kind of did. In a way, the other changes mean that they kind of made it so you could miss some. Because they reduced Remorseless Winter damage. This is the ticking dot that happens while you are in the intermission. This is one of the main drivers behind having to get 100% energy on Mythic. So you still do want to have 100% energy in order to just, you know, do boss dam. But this is going to mean that you maybe don't immediately die to Remorseless Winter. I mean, we did go through intermissions where we missed one ad. We had 96 energy, but it always gets people killed. So maybe this does it. The Hope Breaker damage over time, which is just, if you're a DPS and didn't know this, when he casts Hope Breaker, it applies a permanent dot to everyone. Every time. And so this is just a 15% reduction to that dot. And then the Fiendish Souls are the other adds in the intermission. I actually have no idea what Necrotic Claws does.
I think it's their jump move. I think it's just them jumping. Which is just their cooldown was increased by 50%. So they'll do it, you know, half as often.
Yeah.
which is, yeah. But yeah, I mean, huge nerfs to Anduin. I mean, I think this, again, pushes him maybe more appropriately in the position of where he was in the raid. But yeah. It's just another round of mass nerfs. They just went through a bunch of nerfs on Anduin last week. So they're cleaning this place up, we'll say.
Yeah, they clearly want more people to be getting through these bosses.
Exactly. Next up is Lords of Dread, which we just killed, I think both of us, but a couple of changes here. So again, health reduction on the bosses. So Mal'Ganis and Kintessa both lost 5% of their HP. And then they started reducing some damage. So the Swarm of Decay and Swarm of Darkness damage was reduced by 7.5%. So a little bit less damage in the swarm phases. The add that heals itself now heals itself for slightly more, 13% versus 10, basically cutting off what is that?
That's one cast.
One overall cast.
So the timing on Mythic basically was that the add would finish healing to full immediately before a swarm phase and immediately before an Among Us phase. And so you would need to like be getting it gripped in as soon as it finished. Which is fine. Like, it's very doable if you have just a DPS DK. Like, they just go and they grip it, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It did require you to have a DPS DK, though. And so, if the DK was dead, what we would do is, like, I would roll out during the Among Us phase or during the Swarm phase and, like, paralyze it. So that we could handle it after the phase ended, and the range could kill it. But it does mean that now you don't have to have a DPS DK per se. Like, you have time to be able to, you know, use knockbacks to get it into melee or just kill it.
Yeah, just,
kill it before the swarm happens. And before anybody asks, the reason that you can't have your tank DK do it if you have a blood DK is because if they try and go over there, you will almost certainly end up healing Mal'Ganis because of the other tank taking two frontals. Or you will have the raid get cleaved by the frontal.
Yeah. So that's a nice little change there. Probably one of the bigger ones is Cloud of Carrion no longer disorients when jumping between players on heroic and mythic difficulty. So if you had to pass sort of the green circles, they no longer disorient when they jump between players, which is nice to be able to quickly sort of move them. Where like if someone has too high a stack, you can quickly pass them between a player. And then that individual means that
your DPS won't interrupt tranquility during the swarm phase by passing it off onto your resto druid.
Oh, true. That is, I didn't even think about that. Yes.
we definitely wiped to that at least once.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. So that is a solid change, we'll say. And then the final change on Lords is that Infiltration of Dread duration was increased by 10 seconds. So you have 10 more seconds for the Among Us phase, which we didn't really need it. Even in heroic, I'm assuming on mythic we probably didn't need it either. So
we actually had a couple of silly wipes to it on Friday. Like, we shouldn't have wiped to it, just people weren't voting. Like, it's just people not voting. And having 10 more seconds means that maybe people could have gotten their shit together and voted. But I don't think that really solved the problem of people not voting. Yeah. It does make it a little bit more realistic to do it without a voting weak aura, but I still like you really on mythic you want a voting weak aura. On heroic, it does mean that maybe in heroic your pug doesn't have to have 100% of the voting weak aura.
That's fair. Then the only Rigelon change as we move on is that collapsing quasar field's duration increased by 50% on mythic, which knowing nothing about this boss, I think it just means your quasar kill timings don't have to be as precise.
Yes. So it was, they were 8 seconds, then they became 10 seconds. I don't know if this means they're now 14 seconds.
14 or 15, yeah.
Or if it means they're 20 seconds. I don't think they're 20 seconds. 20 seconds seems like a really long time. They are long enough now that you don't have to be nearly as precise with your kill timings. Like the way you do it is the quasars come in sets of six, but the dark eclipses come in sets of four. So you kill four of them on the first set for your dark eclipses. Then you save two for the next set. You kill two from the next set and the two from the first set for the next four. and then you kill the final four from the second set for your last set of the Dark Eclipses. Mm-hmm. And then you get the, I don't think there's a second set or a third set of quasars. But that gives you exactly as many quasars as you have Dark Eclipses, and it all works out. This means that if you accidentally kill one from the first set early, you're not just boned.
Yeah. Which is I think a good, I don't know, again, not being in a progression, I don't know how often that occurs, but
it depends. Our druids are not allowed to cast Starfall during Rav because they will kill all of them every time. So they're not allowed to cast Starfall. This means that maybe we can get away with them casting Starfall, and then they just, like, all the quasars just die. I still doubt that we're going to want to do that, but it does mean that, like, one, you know, maybe getting killed a little bit too soon is not just going to wipe the raid. It will make the boss easier. Yeah. Not as much easier as Anduin got, but...
No, Anduin, yeah, is... I want people through that. And then maybe the final set of changes are to the Jailer. And so they basically, a bunch of these changes, having only killed Heroic Jailer like twice, and having not had a chance to view this on Mythic just yet, I don't know how impactful these changes are, but there is one big one that I want to talk about, and then we can sort of look at the other ones. The biggest one, at least to the Mythic version of Jailer, is that Diverted Life Shield no longer heals on Mythic difficulty. So for those that are wondering, this is the shield that gets put up by Jailer when you go into the final, the phase four of Mythic, which is the Mythic only phase. And basically what happened is the Jailer would, you take him to 10%, the Jailer would then heal up to 20%, and you do the phase four mechanics to the end of the fight and kill it. There was a way to actually stop that heal from happening with a convoluted use of both mage mechanics and like a specific mage covenant, actually. It was Mirror that did it from Venthyr Mages. So now you don't have to do that anymore. So the shield no longer heal. And then also phase four now triggers at 15% on Mythic. So they've essentially normalized it to say you start phase four at sort of 5% less HP than you would, and you no longer have to do the whole making sure you have a Venthyr Mage to stop this
for casting. So they fixed the Venthyr Mage thing. This has been a long-standing thing. So they fixed the Venthyr Mage thing shortly after the top five. But people found another way to do it. And there was this long thing of like, is it, you know, maybe the, mind games? Is it something else? What's going on? It turns out that the boss is like not in range of the tank when he transitions, then it was like interrupting the heal.
Oh, interesting. See, does that mean the boss have to move to then be in range and wouldn't cast the heal?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And oh, so there is this strat developing where like you would have your, you know, tank, your brewmaster, whatever, when you were getting low, like speed, like just roll away and just hope roll away. And it would give you like a tick of the heal, but that's a lot less than all of the heal. Exactly. And so this actually is a little bit of a buff to the boss. Like it means that if you execute that, you would have had to do less, but it is still like significantly less than doing it as intended.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's sort of a largest change just in terms of that phase four transition point. You don't have to worry about sort of cheesing it, getting there and then missing up, cheesing it to then have to then do the whole phase. You just started at 15%. They also sort of reduced the Bloods of Azeroth on Mythic difficulty that spawn from World Crushers and World Shatters. These are, again, like, I think these were the pools that spawn that you stand in and like link people together and
return the blood to Azeroth.
Yeah. So there's less pools to sort of link together, which it sounds like that's potentially just, it means it's slightly easier in terms of what you're soaking.
It's a pretty significant raid damage event when you do it. Because people that are channeling the blood, you have to like make a conga line and channel the blood back in, and everybody that's doing it takes a bunch of damage. And in phase three, there's all the swirlies that come out, right?
Exactly.
From the people that do it. So it's going to make it easier on the whole because there's just going to be less of them. You still have to do them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a little bit less raid damage and less swirlies to dodge. Cause now you should, I think there used to be two in phase three, and now there should only be one. So you only have to dodge one side of swirlies instead of two. And then a bunch of normal raid finder and heroic difficulty changes. So Decimator no longer knocks back in raid finder normal. Misery no longer knocks back in both raid finder normal and heroic.
If you don't know what misery is, that would be because nothing in the dungeon journal really is called misery. Nothing in the log is called misery. It's the last hit of the tank mechanic.
Yeah.
They gave each hit its own name.
So nice of them.
And
then Rune of Compulsion's absorb effect, which is the mind control.
Yeah.
Has been reduced by 33% on normal and heroic, and then 10%
on mythic.
Those
things have a lot of health. Oh my god, do those things have a lot of health. On heroic,
even on heroic.
Yeah, on heroic, you really needed people to be like stacked under it, or you needed a DK to like immediately grip people so they could be AoE CC'd under the boss. And get like, I mean, they didn't need to be under the boss per se, but they needed to be stacked on top of each other, or you just were not going to have the damage to break the shields.
Exactly.
So this is going to make it a lot easier. I still don't know that you can realistically pug this boss because of the holes in the ground. Like, the holes in the ground are just an absolute pug killer.
Exactly.
The damage check on this boss is not that high, so maybe you can limp to the end, but when you just like lose three people in phase one to just walking into holes, there's just not a lot you can do.
No, it's definitely not a punk friendly boss, but it's some significant changes to Jailer. So I mean, we'll probably see you know, maybe a quicker tier or quicker sort of progression starting on some of the guilds getting to Jailer now. So that's the one thing I think we didn't mention. I didn't know what you were going to say. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Which was basically like we didn't gain much power as people killing these bosses now as the world first people did, right? Like we've talked about this, I think at length, about the fact that like this raid seemed to be tuned to having both four piece and double legendary in place. It was sort of killed by every guild but one in that state. And so the idea is, you know, we didn't gain much by getting double legendary, by getting four piece. And so Blizzard had to nerf these bosses just based on the fact that like, if it took, you know, Echo and Limit or Liquid, I guess, you know, 300 pulls to kill Jailer, like my guild, that's a 600-700 pull boss for my guild.
Argus was my first CE boss that I killed, right?
Yeah.
580 pulls.
That's rough.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, as far as the tier length, at this point last year, like, week by week, next week would be the week that we killed Sylvanas in terms of, like, when Mythic opened. Spent more time in Heroic early on this year to finish our tier sets because they're just so good. Mm-hmm. We did spend some extra time in Heroic last year in order to finish Domination sets, but not as much. It's even adding another couple weeks to that. We're not even going to be starting, you know, the Jailer until after we had killed Sylvanas last year. Like if you lined
that's
up the
crazy.
Tiers,
yeah,
next
yeah,
to each
yeah.
other, it's like a whole month. There's also like, if you look at, when the nerfs for Sylvanas arrived, let me find this. We had a major hot fix on our third week of Sylvanas Prague, at the end of our third week of Sylvanas Prague. And we took too long on Sylvanas, so it was in there 3 weeks from that before we actually killed it. But that corresponds to like the first rounds of Jailer nerfs that we got, because we already got a round of Jailer nerfs. This is the second round. We actually did not get another round of Sylvanas nerfs.
Yeah, because that set basically just cleaned up P1, right? Like the majority of those nerfs were just to make P1 more consistent.
Right, like
Sylvanas. So yeah,
P1 and P2. So during it was like Domination Arrow, health reduction, Dark Sentinel, health reduction, Curse of Lethargy, duration reduction, Decrepit Orb, detonation damage, which this is all like phase two stuff. And then Veil of Darkness specifically in phase two had its size reduced. And then there's like phase three change. They reduced the Banshee's Fury damage. It's just like Jailer in comparison is like they're hitting it way harder, way sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sort of lends to the fact that I think a lot of people like, I think Babs actually made this post or made like a tweet about this, but like the idea that like Anduin, this was, I think, a three like raid instance. I guess there's already been three, but there would have been a 9.3 raid instance. So four tiers, this expansion. And Anduin was the final boss of the 9.2 patch.
Yeah.
And when they condensed it, they sort of had to add the Jailer in. And I think if this tier ends at Anduin, that's a solid tier, like, because we would have killed Anduin last week. So
the issue they run into there is they can't have the Jailer persist as a villain for the next expansion.
Well, if they were going to do a 9.3.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The original plan was to do like three content patches.
I do think they have to get out of the Shadowlands as far as like player base is
concerned. Oh, no, I agree.
They have to get out of the Shadowlands. I do wish that they had done a like Ruby Sanctum kind of raid for the Jailer, though. Like,
give us
the first, you know, eight bosses as a standalone raid tier. Anduin's the end boss, you know. And this is not a unique idea. This was, we talked about the BDGG interview last week, and they were like, let's do this instead. And I think that would have been better. I would have, you know, Helandris would have not needed to get the Omega gutting that it did.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have needed some nerfs in the same way that like Kel'Thuzad got nerfed and Painsmith got nerfed and all of that. But it wouldn't have needed to get gutted in the way that it did, because it was, you know, boss 7 of 11 instead of, it would have been 7 of 8 instead of 7 of 11.
Yeah.
It would have been, it would have preserved that boss, the fun of that boss, in a better way. And it's actually really, my preference for them having split this is almost entirely down to them not having to gut Helandris in order to let most guilds progress beyond it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, that was that, like, Helandris was such a wall in terms of,
because I mean, if they had nerfed it half as much as they had, right, it would have turned it into like a 200 ish pull boss for a lot of guilds like mine.
Yeah.
And when you have a 200 ish pull boss into another 200 ish pull boss and then you're done with the tier, that's okay. It's when you have a 200 into a 200 into like a 30 to 50, which is what Lords of Dread ended up for a lot of guilds on our level. Yeah. 30 to 50. And then another like 100 to 200 on Regalon.
Yeah.
And then another 200 to 300 on the Jailer.
It's such a long tier, in terms of pull count. It's just,
Yeah,
I mean, they needed these, but I think that's sort of I think this might be my final point because we're getting at time anyway, but it's sort of the overcorrection of Blizzard from Sanctum, which I think is a theme that we probably see across everything, which is like they always take a bunch of feedback and then they overcorrect, which I think they should have, but they always go to like the extreme to ensure that like, hey, if the raid tier is too easy, it'll never be too easy again, right? Which is like what they did with it, like if the mists into Warlords transition, which was like when World Quest became big. And that was the idea of like people, you did your dailies and miss and you were done for the day. So you always wanted something to do, where sort of the World Quest concept comes from. And now World Quests are generally
World Quests were Legion, but yes.
Oh, were they? Sorry. Well, yeah. So
It went the like, so that, in miss, it was like all the dailies, right? And you just had so many dailies, and they really cut back on the dailies in WoD. There were still some, but they weren't nearly as many.
You're right, because you're garrison bound. Yeah.
You had garrison. Yeah. And then the world quests were a reaction to you just like being parked in your garrison all the time and like getting you out in the world and doing things where you could actually see other people and not just be in your own little instance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge overcorrection.
Yeah. Which, so, I mean, in fairness, that one actually worked out, because world quests ended up being like, world quests are a lot better than dailies.
That's fair.
They are just dailies, but I like them significantly better than dailies.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
I think you're right. It's an overcorrection. And I think, kind of to wrap things up, there's a lot that they can learn, not just from this tier and how it's gone, that, but from this expansion and how it's gone. And if they genuinely take the lessons from this, and they apply them to Dragonflight, it could be a phenomenal expansion.
I think Dragonflight, it has the potential for me to be a miss-like expansion where I think it'll be generally hated as you play it. And then when you look back, it'll be probably one of the best expansions. Like,
I really hope that's not the case.
But the problem is, Emelson, everybody hates the expansion you're in. Like, people generally hated BFA. Yeah.
I still hate BFA.
It's not as bad, I feel like, as people think. But no, I am hopeful that Dragonflight also is going to be good. I think it'll.
Yeah.
And we'll see. We'll have Alpha. We'll have Alpha in 2 weeks. So.
That's the Anom guarantee. Alpha in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Don't sue us. But true. I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, like lobbying for Brewmaster 4 piece changes, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, come and join the Discord. Lounges are a great place. There's great resources in there, like that now soon to be outdated pin about what killed you with your Brewmaster 4 piece.
Oh yes.
Just lots of good stuff there, even if Brew Lounge is still talking about F1.
It was a good race.
Apparently.
Yes.
Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.